one of the most important things, how you choose your guests. I choose people who are, at least, they did a lot of stuff in their field. Uh-huh. They have some background and they will not come and do misleading stuff. There is no like single right answer. Mm-hmm. Different opinion exists. You cannot do a podcast and always give factual information because some people will talk some stuff that maybe is not accurate. And if I see that the information that person is talking is not accurate, I will tell, come on, bro, it's like, or sis, what you are talking about is misleading.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EVN Disrupt podcast. My name is Nizhdat Zatharyan, and I'm the editor of the tech section here at EVN Report. Our guest this week was Narek Amirkhanyan, the host of the Rearrange podcast. Our episode is a little different this week as we spoke mostly about podcasting itself and not as much about tech. Narek and I explored podcasting as a medium and how it differs from traditional interviews. We also spoke about the responsibilities podcast hosts have when bringing on guests. Thank you for listening. Narek, welcome to EVN Disrupt.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being here. I'm really excited to talk to you because I love podcasting and I've been a consumer of podcasts for probably close to like 20 years now. And whenever people ask me about what some podcasts are in Armenia, I tell them now there are quite a lot of podcasts, but the ones that are true to the very like original format of what a podcast was supposed to be, I always bring up Rearrange as the example. And I say you're the sort of Lex Friedman or Joe Rogan of Armenia. So
thanks.
So I'm really excited to talk to you about podcasting in general, but I want to start with a little bit of your story. Mm-hmm. So about 4 years ago, I spent a month in your hometown of Banazar. Yeah. And one thing I learned when I was there was there's an entire generation of really prominent creators, creatives, musicians mm-hmm. that have all come from Banazar and they're all around your generation.
Yeah.
What was it about Banazar at the time when you were growing up that spawned this generation which you're a part of?
Probably there are two ways you can go. Either become a criminal or be in a creative field.
There's nothing else.
Yeah. So there are, of course, a lot in between. But the vibe of the city, how people are interacting with each other, the weather, that's like almost always gloomy there. And also the fact that it is very close to Tbilisi. We had a lot of cultural influence from Tbilisi, like for at least 100 years. And I don't know what's about the city, but when I was growing up, there are a lot of people who were making rock music. There are a lot of artists, painters. I don't know. I was a big fan of rock music also. There were rock concerts in Vanadzor. Even back then, maybe it was rare in Yerevan. So like people around me were creatives. They were musicians, artists. I don't know. Probably they had a lot of influence on me.
Even in the 90s, were there ways of connecting to the rock scene in the US and Europe where it was really booming at the time?
There was a TV channel called M5, MHink, and they were like broadcasting MTV illegally. Uh-huh. And we had MTV in Vanadzor.
On like public airways?
Like in Vanadzor, you could like watch that TV.
Okay.
Using just regular antenna.
Yeah.
But there was no MTV in Yerevan. Yeah. So like we were growing up in like small town in 90s under influence of MTV.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a small detail that I never heard anyone talk about.
Yeah.
But I think it had a lot of influence on the entire generation. We were able to watch like English American bands playing and how fun it was mm-hmm. and how like bright it was. I don't know how to explain it.
Was the content dubbed in Russian? Or
No.
It was just the pure MTV?
Pure MTV.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like not 24 hour, but there were like some hours that they were broadcasting MTV.
Yeah.
Then we were watching music videos. Like I saw the first music video of System of a Down and I didn't even know that they were Armenians. Mm-hmm. And I discovered about that later and I was like, I was so happy about that.
Who was behind it?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I'm assuming it's long gone.
maybe, yeah. But I think it's a good topic to explore.
Yeah.
I will ask people to understand.
You should find them and invite them to
the idea just came.
Yeah. And then eventually you ended up going to the US for a part of your high school education as well through Flex.
The Flex program, which is like sponsored by US Department. Which department was
I think Foreign it's Department, the State Department.
State Department, yeah. It was sponsored by State Department, and like every year some numbers of students from Armenia and other post-Soviet countries were going to United States, studying there for a year and coming back. When I came back, I just like came back straight to Yerevan.
What part of the US were you in?
I was in Missouri.
Okay.
St. Louis.
St. Louis, nice. Yeah. A big music town.
Yeah. Also like had a lot of music and culture.
What grade was that?
The last grade.
12th grade.
Yeah.
Nice.
American 12th, but back then in Armenia it was 10th grade.
Okay. Got it.
The system was the old one.
Right, right. Where high school ended in
10th grade. Yeah, we were studying 10 years.
Right, right. So you came back to Yerevan and you went to university?
Yeah. It was Yerevan State University of Architecture. I studied there 4 years, worked from the first day of university.
So you're an architect by training?
No, I'm an engineer.
Okay, nice.
First one engineer, then second university. I studied at AUA, American University of Armenia.
Doing business?
Yeah, MBA.
MBA, yeah. And you've spent most of your career in business?
Yeah. From the first day, I was working at IT company as a technical support engineer. It was my second job, actually. The first one, I was a waiter at Marriott Hotel when I was 17. Then I moved to IT company. Then I went serving in the army for 2 years. Came back, ended up in retail. I worked in retail for 10 years. Then I quit it, started my own business podcast. Then I ended up in the IT again.
Mm-hmm. At Hexact, which we've spoken to members of Hexact on the podcast before. Yeah. What brought you to the idea to start a podcast?
As you always like long, I had already long history with podcast, and I knew like very few people in Armenia who were enjoying podcast as much as I do. I was listening to like a lot of different podcasters in English, some in Russian.
Do you remember the first podcast that you started following?
I don't remember. I think it was Tim Ferriss.
Oh, nice.
I think it was Tim Ferriss or Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm Gladwell had like a really good show called Revisionist History. Mm-hmm. It was one of my favorite ones. I think he's still doing it, but I'm not following. There was like a very nice podcast in NPR called Hidden Brain. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that podcast. Joe Rogan, then Lex came much later. There are a lot of podcasts that I was listening to, and I understood that there is a market for that for sure in Armenia, but nobody is doing it. And I, because I was so like frequent listener of podcasts, I understood that most of the podcasts are not even journalists.
Yeah,
some of them had big business background like me. So I said, like, if I want, why not do it? And I just started to do it.
I think that's kind of the secret of podcasting, is not so much of a secret, but the idea that it's not journalists, that it's people who either just curious individuals like yourself that speak to a very wide range of people, guests, or people who are domain experts in their fields, and they're speaking to other professionals from their sector, and just having real conversations and dialogue, as opposed to a journalist looking to just ask questions to get into the weed of something. It feels like you're joining a conversation of two people instead of listening to some journalistic endeavor.
I think it should be that way. Podcast should be like very easy, without specific agendas, and you should follow the conversation, not the pre-made questions. And sometimes conversation can lead somewhere else that you didn't plan to go, but it's interesting. There is a flow. You should stay there. And in the beginning, I was thinking to do like mainly business focus, because like all my surrounding was business, and I was inviting my professors from AUA, my friends from different business fields. But I didn't go in a specific niche, because I understood that if you want to do it long, and if you want to do it as for many years, let's say, you cannot do in a specific field because there's like limited numbers of experts or in any specific field in Armenia. So one day they will be, the guests will be, the number of guests will be like zero.
You'll run out.
You will run out of the guests. So I felt like there are a lot of things that are interesting for me, like music, business, IT, technology, I don't know, social things, sometimes politics.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm doing like, I don't have a specific topic and I just invite people who seem interesting to me.
Yeah, which is kind of the greatest job in the world.
Yeah, yeah, like I really enjoy it. At first I was spending a lot of money, then it even started to become profitable.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome, yeah. Earlier you said...
I was saying that it was just an expensive hobby.
Expensive hobby, yeah. But it's amazing to have a platform that people want to be on, and then people who you might not otherwise have an opportunity to sit down and speak with about anything you want for 2 hours, you have this opportunity to just invite them.
Yeah, it's just have just amazing conversations. Because like I had billionaires, I had like artists that I admired. I never thought that I will be friends with them.
Yeah.
And this platform gave me a lot of things. Network, friends, people who appreciate what I do. And it's really like humbling experience.
I say to a lot of my friends, podcasting is the greatest networking tool.
So yeah, like for sure.
If you're lucky enough to be able to start one, you should. Yeah
for sure. Because like I always worked as an employee in different companies before I quit it and started to do whatever I do. And when you are an employee, you are always in the second league. And if you want to be in the first league, you have to start something. And maybe podcasting is one of the best things that you can start to build a network. But you should start it if you want to do it for a long time. And if you have like natural curiosity, you should not start it for like, how to say it, for promoting your brand or for doing a network or for sure not for becoming famous.
Is that because it just takes a long time being consistent to build any sort of traction and following? And if you're not going to stick through it, you'll lose out.
Yeah. When people are asking what is special thing about Rearrange, I'm saying because it's been in the market for 4.5 years and every week we are doing an episode. Nothing special, just consistency and being consistent.
Yeah.
And try to like find people who are really, really can be interesting.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something a little bit earlier, which was that podcasting is all about really the conversation and producing content that the consumer can follow as a conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember like in the early days of podcasting, like mid-2000s, 2006, 2007, podcasting was almost all done by sort of amateurs,
mm-hmm.
not people from like the New York Times or NPR, BBC, etc. Now it seems like all of the large like professional players have entered the podcasting space, and they've kind of brought with them
curated content,
but also like very journalistic, dryish content. Whereas before it was just like friends sitting around a table with bad mics and like having a conversation. And everything is now called a podcast.
Yeah.
Do you have a definition for yourself of what separates an actual podcast versus some sort of journalistic content pretending to be a podcast?
The first thing was how the content was distributed.
Yeah.
Podcast called podcast because it was an RSS audio file and you could distribute to different audio platforms and anyone can download your audio and listen. But now, like, because... like podcasts are everywhere in YouTube, on TV, or like everywhere. It's like weird when you can see a podcast on a TV. probably they're like, I would say like there are two types of podcasts. One is the way how I'm doing and you are doing it. It's like conversation and sometimes can host even talk more than the guest.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, it like for our listeners, it was weird that I could talk more than my guests.
Yeah.
They were writing comments like, Narek, let your guests speak while you are speaking so much. Then they understood the format. Now sometimes guests are coming and up front they are asking me questions, which is like, I can see how it changed the market. And the second type is like very curated, scripted podcast about specific topic. When the host is reading and telling some story or crime stories or historical things, I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. That's an even third category maybe that I didn't mention earlier. But like you have content like Andrew Huberman, where for 3 hours he sits and explains these really like difficult scientific concepts to general audiences, and hundreds of thousands of people, sometimes millions of people, listen to it. It's really amazing that you can that kind of content can have an audience.
Like, I was amazed that like I was able to invite scientists and we're talking about like very specific topics, and that podcast can like reach hundreds of thousands of people. And I was like, wow, like it is like the only content in Armenia that scientists can talk for 2 hours and 100,000 people will watch it.
Yeah.
And it makes me proud.
It really speaks to something though, because I think the old formats had really exhausted their capability to attract interest from general audiences.
I think it's because of because most of the companies that are creating journalism, so-called, they have special agendas, they have ad revenue, they have some big corporations behind them, and they have to be very careful with their content. With podcasts, most of the people are not backed by companies and they're just doing it for fun. And they're like, most of them are really trustworthy. Some of them just pretend that they are trustworthy and they also have agenda. But with Rearrange, I can speak for myself, but we're not backed by any political party. We don't have like managers, directors, editors, and I'm just talking whatever I want to talk. And I'm also telling the guests, like, you are free to talk whatever you want.
Right. It's also harder to be fake in a conversation setting.
Yeah, you're doing it for years. You are doing a conversation. If you are fake it every time, like people will notice.
Yeah.
You have to be like very authentic.
Yeah.
People sometimes like meet in the streets and start to talk with me, ask questions, and I answer the very questions. I ask them questions, and sometimes it can like be up to 10, 15 minutes, and they're saying, wow, it was like Rearrange. But I was like, yeah, because like who I'm right now in the street, I'm the same person in studio.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's the beauty of that kind of content. You have to be whoever you are.
Yeah.
And also it's a competitive advantage because each one of us are unique. And when you are yourself, no one can copy you. Like no one can copy Rearrange because no one can copy me.
Right. Yeah.
And the content also is changing and evolving as you change and evolve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like I think you now see a lot of American political commentators starting podcasts. Mm-hmm.
But like Tucker Carlson?
That's the example that was in my head. And when I watch a Tucker Carlson podcast, it seems fake.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's the same as when he was on Fox.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, because it is fake.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he's faking it, but he is.
His demeanor is fake.
Yeah, he is have a persona that he built for his audience, and he's trying to be the persona that he built. Maybe he's that way, but for me it sounds fake because he's speaking the same way he was speaking on Fox News.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no way that was real.
Nothing is real in Fox or CNN. Yeah.
Earlier you said, you know, a lot of people were writing saying you're talking more than the guests and like it's too much and stuff. I sometimes find, especially when speaking to maybe people a little bit older than us, when they watch Rearrange, they'll say that it's not like the correct
way.
Yeah, the correct way. And like it also, it they perceive it as something other than just genuineness.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that over these last 4 years that you've been active, that perception has changed?
I think
amongst
it does.
Like wider society, not just your core like listeners.
It did, because I'm getting less and less of that kind of comments. Because not because of only Rearrange, but there are also a lot of podcasts in the market mm-hmm. right now, and people are starting to understand the specific side of this format.
Yeah.
But yeah. Some people, especially like older generation, they don't like it.
Yeah.
Because like I speak too much. I speak not clear Armenian. I use English words.
They think
I
it's unprofessional.
Yeah, yeah. I use Russian words. They think it's unprofessional. And yeah. I'm just how to say it? Unintelligent guy who is pretending to be intelligent
right.
speaking with people and doesn't understand anything that they are saying.
Because they're used to like a suit and a tie person.
Yeah, yeah.
Or someone in like
and smart questions. And
very like, formal questions. Yeah.
Like I had a director of Martin Adaran at my podcast, and one of the things that I wanted to ask him, like, why even Martin Adaran exists?
Uh-huh.
Like, no journalist will ask that question because that question sounds stupid.
Yeah.
But it's I think it's a good question because when you ask that question, you understand the core of or vision of the place, why it should be there.
Yeah.
Why should government or I don't know, private donors give money to that institute?
Yeah. Oftentimes people will be extremely critical of someone like Joe Rogan because they'll say he asks questions that are either like misleading or maybe they'll say it's dumb or it's like if it's on one side or the other, they'll say it's filled with propaganda or something like that. But I think he often, even though he's an extremely wealthy and successful person, obviously, he's not the average American.
He's not.
I think he asks questions that are often on the minds of average Americans that people, like you said, are not accustomed to asking in traditional mediums.
Mm-hmm.
And having someone ask a question like that, like having someone ask a question like, why does the Matan Adaran even exist? That should be a question that is asked somewhere because there are a lot of people who have that question on their mind and can't necessarily either find the answer or are themselves embarrassed to ask it because it might sound dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question that should be answered. Right?
For sure, yeah. Because like there is one very like good book called Alchemy. One of the directors of Ogilvy wrote that book. And he there gives like a very nice example. He's saying like, if people who stand on the buses are always feel that it's unfair.
Uh-huh.
And like no one will ask why it's not good standing.
Yeah.
That question, because it's stupid, because like nobody likes to be like to stand. But when you ask that question and try to find the answer is unfairness.
Mm-hmm.
Because they think that they paid the same amount, but someone is sitting comfortably and he's standing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you ask that question and find the root cause that it's unfairness, you can find the ways how you can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Like give USB chargers or some other perks to the ones that are standing.
Mm-hmm.
And they will not feel unfairness and it will be okay for them to stand.
Right, if they're compensated
But to understand it, you have to ask stupid questions.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, why people do not like standing.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, first answer is like, it's stupid.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody wants to stand, but actually there are a lot of people who like to stand,
mm-hmm.
but if they will feel that it's fair
mm-hmm.
because they paid the same amount. So there are some questions that need to be asked. Why? Because it's important. Because it's important to understand. It's not my job in Rearrange. It's not a job. Why I'm doing it? Because I'm not trying or pretending to be a smart guy like a lot of people do. I just want to have genuine, interesting conversation to get something from there.
Yeah.
And if I want to get something from there, I have to ask the question that I want. Even if it sounds dumb for someone who is like 50 or like 60 years old and his whole life he watched only like public TV where everything is you know how how it is.
There's also this conception of people assume that a lot of things are common knowledge,
but it is not.
It's not common knowledge. It's just commonly accepted. For example, like I think if you took a flat earther, someone who believes the earth is flat, mm-hmm. and someone who's like really studied on the subject, like they know all the conspiracy theories about why you can present the earth as flat from their point of view and stuff, and you put them up against an average person who's probably forgotten all of the physics they learned in school.
Yeah, well, they will crush him.
Exactly. The flat earther will be able to be more convincing in their argument.
For sure.
Because that person, the average person, has outsourced their reliance of the earth not being flat on the rest of society.
Yeah.
And they don't need to know they don't necessarily need to know to live their lives why the earth, how to prove that the earth is round.
For sure. Right? There's a like very good book called Knowledge Illusion. Uh-huh. And their author talks about this topic, and they did an experiment. They were asking people, do you know how a bicycle works, or do you know how toilets work? And 90% were saying yes, but when you were asking, like, can you like put it on paper how bicycle works or how a toilet is working when you flush the water, 10% maybe could answer. Yeah. But you think you know it.
Yeah.
Because
you use the things.
Yeah. 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 It's called knowledge illusion.
We take a lot of things for granted.
For
in
sure.
In the modern world. But all sure. these things working. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also this idea, though, of as podcasting has become a huge medium. Like, for example, in 2012, it would have been unthinkable that a presidential candidate in the United States would have gone on a podcast.
Yeah.
Maybe NPR, right?
Or yeah, maybe like NPR, yes.
But never Joe Rogan, never the other ones, never Lex Friedman. Lex Friedman didn't even exist back then. Mm-hmm. 2016, it was like people would start...
Call him daddy.
Yeah.
That would be like really unthinkable.
2016, I remember, okay, now podcasts are kind of popular. People started saying, oh, maybe next election cycle, people start coming on podcasts. 2020, like the smaller candidates, like the less popular candidates started going on podcasts, like Andrew... I'm sorry, I forgot his name.
Andrew Young,
the Democratic politician who was in favor of basic income.
Yeah,
I forget his name now. And then this election cycle, 2024, now Trump is on like a new podcast every week.
Yeah.
There's talks that Kamala will go on some podcast maybe soon, and things of that nature. And there's all of a sudden this seriousness now that comes to podcasts, and people start expecting more from the hosts in terms of their responsibility to not produce content that is misleading to general audiences. One, in general, how do you think about that responsibility for yourself? Because obviously you have on guests that speak about the same topic, but from different perspectives, mm-hmm. and their viewpoints contradict each other, right?
Yeah.
How do you ensure that your average listener who isn't necessarily very well educated on that topic can come away with having an opinion on it that is informed rather than just fed to them by one side?
Like, one of the most important thing, how you choose your guests. They like, I choose people who are at least, they did a lot of stuff in their field. Uh-huh. They have some background. Yeah, and they will not come and do misleading stuff. And because there are a lot of things that there is no like single right answer. Mm-hmm. There are, like, in the book that I talked earlier, in that book he's saying like the opposite of good idea also can be a good idea. So there are a lot of things that different opinion exists, and probably it's a role of a person who is listening to synthesize that information and understand if he wants to believe it or no. And if he wants to believe it, at least do some research. You cannot do a podcast and always give factual information, because some people will talk some stuff that maybe is not accurate. And if I see that the information that person is talking is not accurate, I will tell, come on, bro, it's like, or sees what you are talking about is misleading. Like I had that kind of conflict with one of my guests who is talking about things like some stuff that regarding vaccines,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of the topics that like is very important for me. Like I don't tolerate anti-vax stuff in my podcast,
mm-hmm.
because if we will not vaccinate our children, half of them will die.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like that like 100 years ago, and one of the things that like now kids leave,
mm-hmm.
it's because they are getting vaccinated.
Right. Yeah.
We can like question the new vaccines, how they are tested, their side effects. No one is saying that we should not do that, but the things that already worked and saved millions of lives, we should have at least appreciation for it.
And they shouldn't be questioned with misinformation.
Yeah. Because when you are saying, okay, you can talk specifically about COVID vaccine, no problem, but don't say vaccines in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you talk, saying stuff that vaccines are bad and not doing specifically which vaccine and why it is bad, people start to listen to you and they don't do like regular vaccines like polio. Polio right. can kill your kid.
Right. Like hepatitis or something.
Yeah. And they're not doing stuff that is like generally agreed by all the scientists, most of them, that you should do it. And like, I'm sure like 20% of Armenian kids are not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. No. And because of this misinformation culture around vaccines. Yeah.
Yeah.
The COVID vaccine topic is an interesting example because, like you said, so when it was being administered, it was a new vaccine. Okay, if it's a new vaccine, there isn't like all the data in the world to back it like there is for polio and
mm-hmm.
hepatitis and things of that nature. So it can, at a minimum, it's probably fair to say that if someone has questions about that, those are fair questions.
For sure. Right? They should ask it.
They should ask those questions.
And government should answer that question, or pharma companies.
Governments and pharma companies have a responsibility to campaign for it in a mm-hmm. way that creates public trust and things of that nature. Although that's also challenging because often those institutions lack trust to begin with.
Yeah.
So as a podcast host, so you would never tolerate, let's say, like anti-polio vaccine discussions. But if one of your guests was speaking about the COVID vaccine in a way where, oh, I don't know about this or something like that, how would you approach that conversation as someone who wanted people to be vaccinated during COVID?
Like I would say that a lot of things we should do because it's already proven that it's beneficial for us. Regarding new vaccines, for sure we should ask questions. Because with COVID is interesting situation when the communication from government and from the companies was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how the correct way is. Because they were saying that if you will get vaccinated, you will not get COVID.
And right, then, in the beginning, that was the messaging.
And you will not transmit it to others. But then we understood that you can get COVID and but you can transmit others.
Yeah.
And it created a lot of mistrust that you are using billions of dollars and lying to us about the vaccine. And also there were some cases with bad outcomes and people died because of vaccines or got ill. And every vaccine has it. Like,
mm-hmm.
How much you gain from it,
right, and the
how,
bigger picture.
Yeah, and how much you use it, lose from it, it is the important question.
Right.
But when, like, with my wife also, we had this conversation with some other friends. If you will get polio vaccine, for example, this is like a theoretical thing that I'm saying. I don't know the numbers. And one of the million of kids will die, like people say, like I don't want to be that 1 millionth. I am not ready to no one is want to be that 1 million, especially if about the kids. So there are a lot of questions right. there, and probably we should talk about it openly, but with a lot of misinformation and flood of like fake news, people are lost.
Yeah,
people are lost. That's why I try to invite people who have some expertise and specialties, mm-hmm. and also background.
There's also the issue of, so like on the point about, there was, I don't know if misinformation is the right word, but there's confusion around the messaging from public institutions around the COVID vaccine. At the beginning, it's marketed as a vaccine, which in most people's minds is you take this thing and you never get the disease. Mm-hmm. And then it was, okay, you might still get the disease, but it's less likely. And if you get it, it'll be less severe. But at that point, you've already broken the trust. And then when you add another layer on top of that of people saying, if you question this stuff, you're a bad person, mm-hmm. then that creates an even stronger reaction towards that, which leads people to just close the page altogether and say, oh, I'm against this altogether.
Most of it happens because of like very bad communication.
Yeah.
And people labeling each other.
Yeah, like, it turned political.
Yeah, you're like far right activist and you're anti-vax.
Yeah.
Or you're a far left activist and you want, take our kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they are like, it's the same thing in Armenia. We are giving labels each other,
mm-hmm.
but reality is there are a lot of different variations.
Yeah, yeah. It's just interesting that since a lot of these conversations are moving into the podcasting sphere, now people who started their podcasts as just a fun hobby that then turned into these bigger projects have to think about these things that they're not necessarily... They probably weren't thinking of when they first started the mm-hmm. the work. Yeah,
for sure.
I remember when you first... I found you during COVID. I found Rearrange, I think, like...
That was the beginning.
Spring, summer 2020. And at the time, there was only one other that I knew of podcast that was similar in format, which was, I think it was called the Yerevan podcast, which was...
Edgar from...
Edward and his co-host, mm-hmm. Whose name I forget. But they stopped shortly after. Today, there's probably a couple dozen podcasts that are in different formats,
mm-hmm.
In Armenian. In the English space, like, globally, like in America, millions. And Europe, it just feels so saturated now. Like every single person, every single company has a podcast, it seems like. Do you think the market is getting too saturated to the point where it just becomes pointless or way too hard to start a new podcast? Or do you think podcasting allows itself for these niches to just constantly...
It depends on the market. Like in Armenia, there is a lot of space still. A lot of people can start podcasts, and even in US, you can start the podcast.
Yeah.
And if you have something to say, interesting thing, do it. Why not?
Yeah.
It's like now, like barriers of entry is like very low.
Mm-hmm.
You can anyone can start the podcast, and a lot of people are doing. In Armenia, it's not popular yet. It's not mainstream. If we will go out and ask 10 people, what do you know about podcast?
Mm-hmm.
I think 6 of them will say, what is a podcast?
Yeah.
In Armenia, podcast is not mainstream. Like Rearrange is like pretty popular, but still it is not mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of room to grow. And when people are saying like, Rearrange is at its peak, I'm saying that it just started.
Right, yeah.
Because it can be in peak like after maybe 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then after it, maybe it will not have any place to grow.
Hmm.
Because a lot of people from the diaspora started to watch also, and like it's even bigger market than Armenia.
Right.
Like 30% of our listeners are not from Armenia.
Mm-hmm.
United States, Russia, Europe, and it's as I understand, for some of them, it's a good way to connect with Armenia.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's definitely a good way to connect to Armenia. It's like when I started listening to Rearrange, I just moved to Armenia.
Uh-huh.
I was here for like 6 months probably. And I remember because it was COVID and like a lot of things were closed and stuff, my social interactions were less at that time too. And I remember I learned a lot of like Armenian slang from Rearrange even.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I connected to like, it was like a gateway into like local culture in a way that someone like in in America, who moves to America might watch Friends and learn a lot of stuff. I watched Rear Engine.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. It can like be. That.
Sometimes people ask me why you are not doing in English. I'm saying that I have nothing to add in English.
Yeah, it's way too saturated.
Yeah, because I'm culturally, I'm not from there. I do not, even if I read English news or American news or I read in English, I speak English, but culturally I'm here in Armenia.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to give something outside of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if it's a niche that you are talking about the culture from outside of the culture.
Right.
That way, maybe.
Yeah.
But from maybe if I will move to the US and live there for 5 years, maybe I will start to understand better. Yeah. I understand it pretty good because I was an exchange student in the United States, but still I'm culturally very different.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a like very nice book. Lately I'm talking about a lot about that book called Simulacra and Simulation.
Mm-hmm.
There the author talks about how media is creating a environment when you see the simulation and you think it's a reality.
Mm.
Sometimes we mess it up and we watch Hollywood movies or we read American news or listen to American podcasts and we think that we understand their reality, but it's just a simulation of the reality
that
we are like, maybe do not fully understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like because you have so little experience of actually living next to that people.
Yeah.
And even if people are moving to United States, most of them from Armenia are still connected with Armenians or people from post-Soviet Union countries.
Yeah.
And till the end of their days, they are not getting integrated to US culture.
Yeah.
And
you kind of see that in Armenia with diasporans who move here.
Yeah.
Because they just hang out with other diasporans and they fail to integrate with local society.
For sure. Yeah. It's easier that way. I understand
why. You create bubbles.
Yeah. And like a couple months ago, I was in Miami for a month and I had the same kind of experience. There are a lot of Russians who moved to Miami. There are a lot of post-Soviet country from pro-Soviet countries, and that people stick together.
Yeah,
they talk Russian. They understand each other's culture because we lived 100 years in the same country, Soviet Union, and we understand Russian culture more easily than we understand American culture, or even we can talk with Kazakh people or from Kyrgyzstan or from Georgia. From Russia, and we understand each other culturally better than we understand Americans or Europeans.
There's a commonality that helps you get there.
Yeah.
You know, though, like in some ways, you say people, Armenians from Armenia, when they move abroad, they still stick together, or they make friends with a lot of like people from post-Soviet countries. But I find that Armenians from Armenia will sometimes move to a place where you just would not expect to find an Armenian, like somewhere in Ohio, somewhere in, I don't know, like Nebraska or something. I remember my first year in Armenia, I was in a cab, I was in a taxi, and the driver says, where are you from? I said, Canada. He said, oh, my sister lives there. I said, oh, Toronto or Montreal? And he said, no, Yukon. And Yukon is like the very, very north of Canada where like, I don't know, very, very few people live. It's like snow all year.
Mm-hmm. Extremely cold.
I said, what does she do there? And he said, her husband got a job in the gold mines and they work there. And like, that's just a very obvious thing for someone to do when moving to another country. They go where there's a good job.
Yeah.
Right. Armenians from Lebanon, Syria, Iran, and the greater Middle East, they'll go where there's like a church, a chapter of like the political party they're a member of, an AGBU community or something like that. It's almost like transferring from their community in those places to one in Toronto, Montreal, or LA or
The same kind of community, but with better economics.
Yeah. But Armenians from Armenia, I've always felt that since their identity is tied to a country, first and foremost, they're used to living in a country, not a community. And when they go to a new country, they do things that are obvious in a country, like you go where there's a good job. Right. So I've always felt like they're freer in that sense than the traditional diasporans.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's an interesting. Maybe some, but most still will go to California. Right. Where they have friends, they have relatives, and where they can find people who speak the same language.
Yeah.
Because it's culturally extremely hard where you go to the new place and you don't know nobody and you don't fully understand the language or the culture, and you have to integrate there.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to stick with the people you know.
Community definitely helps.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's get back to podcasting. Have you seen this Notebook LM project by Google? Google?
Yeah, I saw it.
Have you seen the podcast that people are generating?
No.
Using it? So you can give it like some piece of content. Like, for example, people are giving it 30, 40 page scientific papers,
mm-hmm.
and they tell Notebook LM, which is this AI system, generate a podcast based on this research paper. And then these two AI guests, or hosts, I should say, they just discuss the content of that paper, and then you end up listening and learning about all the paper. Do you think podcasting is set to change in any meaningful way moving forward, or do you think it'll stick to the
classic? I don't think so. Maybe you will use AI to get more information, but the beauty of podcasting is just people talking with each other. Yeah. People.
Not AI.
not AI. And people are not listening only podcasts for getting information.
Mm-hmm.
They are listening it for a warm conversation.
Yeah.
And they are listening it, I don't know, maybe to get sense of community or something like that. There are different reasons people are listening, but they will continue to listen to other people.
Yeah, first and foremost.
Yeah, where they can make connections.
Yeah. Nayak, last question. Your traditional question. What motivates you to wake up every day and continue what you're doing?
My son.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, when I became a father, it really changed me
mm-hmm.
in a good way. I became more responsible. I understood how it's to love someone so much. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
And probably I want to know who I can become by making good choices, by investing on relationships, becoming physically fit, try to be productive, create different projects, different values, and understand who I can become. Like it's hard to explain, but we constantly change, and based on our environment and but mostly the decisions that we make, we can become a different person in, I don't know, 2 year period, 5 year, 10 year, because who I was before COVID and who I am now are totally different people.
Does the answer to that question of who you can become keep changing?
Yeah.
Great answer.
I don't know. I think all of us have. I think one of the best things that you can do is be useful.
Mm-hmm.
And when you try to do something that is useful to other people, they always give back. And by sometimes it can change you to become even better. I don't know. It's a different difficult question, and I didn't fully spend more enough time to understand it deeply, but I can see that a lot of things are changing, and we have responsibility to do something.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nayak.
Thank you too for inviting me. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise.
And this is your last podcast.
This is my last podcast, yeah. Thank you to everyone who's listened to EVN Disrupt for the last 2.5 years, almost 100 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah. And stay tuned to find out how Disrupt will be continuing. But
Are you going to miss it?
I'm going to miss podcasting, yeah. The thing that I'm going to miss the most is just being able to invite whoever I want to come and sit down and speak like this for an hour.
Mm.
That's a huge privilege that you will probably only get when having a medium like this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So nothing about me. It's me sitting here.
Huge thank you to the podcast producers, first Sona, then Anya, and now Chris over the last 2.5 years. Nayak, thank you so much for this awesome conversation.
Thank you too, and I really hope you will find whatever will, something that will replace podcasting, and you will enjoy it as much as you did with podcasting. I imagine how you like it.
Thank you,
because I really like what I do.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. Thank you so much.
Hail podcast.